You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss.
The biggest banking group in Malaysia and one of the biggest in Southeast Asia, Maybank has long been considered a lumbering giant. How has the bank changed? To tell us more is Dato' Sri Abdul Wahid Omar, the President and CEO of Maybank. Welcome to the show and thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
When you were appointed CEO in 2008, the bank was financially sound and it already had an extensive branch network and of course it's still financially sound. So some market players have described your job as a no-brainer. Is this a fair assessment?
I think being the largest bank in Malaysia, obviously there are challenges in running Maybank. It's also very related to the time as well. When I joined the bank, Maybank had just embarked on three major acquisitions in Indonesia, Pakistan and Vietnam. So there was a need to see through those acquisitions. At that point in time, in 2008, the global economy was also entering into a global recession. There was the global financial crisis, so we had to deal with that the situation. And there's also the need for capital raising exercise to fund the three major transactions. And I guess it was a challenging time, but I guess Maybank, being a very large institution, has got a lot of resources with a lot of support from all the stakeholders, and we were able to see through the transactions and right through the difficult period of the 2008 crisis, and we've emerged victorious.
And when you came in, it was also a time when the bank was under a lot of scrutiny because it had just embarked on the acquisition of Bank International Indonesia, and there was like a leadership vacuum, and there was a lot of questions raised about that. But do you feel that your deal, that acquisition, has now been justified?
Absolutely. I think it was a very strategic decision. We aspire to be a regional financial services leader. When we talk about the region, we talk about Southeast Asia. And if you are serious about Southeast Asia, you cannot ignore the largest economy in Southeast Asia and the fastest growing economy in Southeast Asia, and that is Indonesia. There are limited opportunities in Indonesia. So obviously, there will be a scarcity premium that you have to pay to gain entry into that market. But I guess now, 3 years on, we've made significant progress in Indonesia and very much on track to realize our aspirations.
And now talking about present time, after a record performance last year, local CEO bankers, including yourself and also CIMB, have cautioned that there will be a slowdown. For example, I think Maybank, it might be feeling the heat now. Its net interest margins fell 23 basis points in the first quarter, ended 30th September, to 2.46%. So how bad can it be for Maybank for the coming three quarters?
Well, there are a few issues to look at. I think firstly, the market that we operate in, they're all very competitive. In some markets like Indonesia, for example, it is a high net interest margin environment. But as the country progresses, you can expect net interest margin to narrow. Beyond that, you also have the issue of very stiff competition. In all the three markets of ours, home markets, I'm referring to Malaysia, Singapore and Indonesia, where there's strong competition for retail loans in particular. So that's actually quite natural. So our role as a bank is to manage our portfolio holistically, not just about the net interest margin, but also to look at how we manage our costs overall. And the idea would be to grow profitably. And I think that's what we have demonstrated in the past many years.
So for your net interest margin for Malaysia, it's about 2.46%. So do you think it will stabilize maybe at 2% the next three quarters?
No, I don't think we'll go down to that extent. I think, yes, to be competition. I think a 2.4% level would be relatively comfortable.
Okay, so and your Malaysian Indonesian operations, you know, local loans in Malaysia have only grown about 7%, but your overseas operations obviously has been it's showing higher growth, like Singapore and Indonesia, and loans done by Bank International Indonesia, I think, for example, grew about 27% year on year. So how many more quarters can you sustain such growth?
I think one must remember that the growth in the loans is very much dependent on the growth in the underlying economy. In countries like Indonesia, for example, we are still expecting Indonesia to grow by 6.4% for next year. And typically in the growing economy, loans will grow between 1.5 to 2 times the GDP. And in the case of Indonesia, given the very strong domestic economy, we can expect that multiplier to be even higher. So in the case of Indonesia, we still believe that for next year, it will grow by the teens at the very least. And in the case of Malaysia, if we're looking at a 4% growth in the economy, for example, typically the Malaysian banking system can grow by the upper single digit growth number.
And in a surprise move, the central bank in Indonesia had cut its key rate by 25 basis points in October, and then in November it cut by 50 basis points to a record low of 6%. And this was some economists have said that this was really surprising. So to what extent will this cut hurt your interest margin in Indonesia?
Well, first of all, you must understand and appreciate the rationale behind the cut. I think at the end of the day, there is need for any country to maintain a positive real interest rate. And given the fact that the inflation is getting more under control in Indonesia, so there was a view that the country or economy was ready for a lower interest rate environment. But even if you're talking about 6.5%, that's still high compared to other countries in the region. Now, the net interest margin in Indonesia is still high at above 5%. And I think it is quite normal for most countries wanting to reduce the cost of doing business, if you like. And that's something which they will continue to undertake. I think there's another element to it in respect of the expected improvement in the credit rating of Indonesia. So I think there is the expectation that, that Indonesia will be upgraded, and all those will contribute towards lowering of interest rate. Now, on our part, whilst we can expect narrowing in our net interest margin, it is important for us to look at the business holistically. So if we manage our costs better, we will still be able to grow our profits.
So you expect to maintain a net interest margin about 5% for the next three quarters?
Well, it is our hope to be able to maintain at that level. I think another important factor to remember would be the composition of that portfolio. So I think based on the current profile of our portfolio, which is very much balanced between retail, commercial and corporate banking, and with some activities in auto financing, I think a 5% net interest margin is reasonable.
Gross impaired loan ratio rose to 19% quarter on quarter in Indonesia to about 1 billion ringgit, and this was mainly due to car financing. So given the situation, would you try to reduce exposure in car financing, or you grow that less aggressively?
Well, the car financing market is growing profitably in Indonesia, where we have experienced the increase in impaired loans would be in the area of motorcycle financing. And that's mainly via a subsidiary of BRI, which is called Warm Finance. And I think the situation is very much under control. In the scheme of things, it is a small portfolio compared to our total group loan base of close to 300 billion ringgit.
And Maybank owns 97% of BII, and there are talks that the Indonesian Central Bank wants to cap foreign shareholding limit or cap individual shareholding limit to maybe 49%. And if Maybank has to cut its stake in BII, it could result in negative growth in the group because, you know, BII is contributing so much to your business. So what's the likely decision by the Central Bank?
We have been engaging with the regulators, Bank Indonesia in particular, in terms of getting understanding what was the intention. And from our engagement, it is not about limiting the foreign bank shareholding. It is actually looking at the possibility of limiting the shareholding by any single shareholder to not more than 50%. It is being reviewed as a possibility. They have not made any decision. And the rationale, as was explained to us, was in the effort to improve corporate governance. So I think the if you look at some of the issues facing some banks in Indonesia in the past, it has been because of the involvement of majority shareholder in some of the banks. So some of them actually failed and had some issues. But from our perspective, certainly being part of a banking group, it is to the advantage of BRI, for example, to have another major bank as a controlling shareholder. In many ways, it should be similar to this situation here in Malaysia.
We also have a shareholding limit, individual shareholding limit as well.
Exactly. But it doesn't apply to, you know, global banks. For example, Standard Chartered Malaysia is wholly owned by Standard Chartered Group. Likewise, HSBC, OCBC, and so on.
So, well, some market observers say such a ruling would probably apply to new acquisitions, if any, and otherwise it would severely impact Indonesia's efforts to attract foreign investment and also maintain market confidence, isn't it?
Well, there is always that expectation that any new rules should not be applied retrospectively. But I think, again, this is very much still on the drawing board, and we are still engaging with the regulators.
What is your plan B then if, say, BII does go ahead with, the Central Bank of Indonesia does go ahead and limit shareholding limit, and you have to sell down your stake in BII?
Well, from our perspective, we always observe the local requirements. As is now, there is already that requirement that we will pare down our stake in BRI from 97% down to 80%. This is in respect of the earlier ruling that they issued for us when we undertook the tender offer for the BRI shares. Of course, we are given flexibility in terms of the timing for implementation. And I think likewise, if there's any further requirements to pare down our stake further, we will have to look at complying with them. But again, it is important for us to be able to engage with the regulators. Our hope is that it will not be applied retrospectively. But if it does, then the assurance that has been given to us is that we will be given ample time in order to comply.
Do you think by next year you'll be able to sell down your stake to 80%?
It's very much dependent on the market. I think we've been very pragmatic in our approach. When the share price was hitting, you know, very high level at the 700 rupiah level, we were selling in the market, but obviously the liquidity wasn't there. So the moment you place your sell order, I guess the share price actually come down. So again, we've been in full compliance with whatever being required by the regulators in Indonesia.
Okay, so probably, well, next year might not be a good time to sell then.
Again, we are given the flexibility. At the end of the day, we will sell into the right market condition.
Okay, of course. And this morning, we are speaking with Dato' Sri Abdul Wahid Omar, the President and CEO of Maybank. After this, we'll discuss about the acquisition of Kim Eng.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Joining us this morning is Dato' Abdul Wahid Omar, President and CEO of Maybank. If you have any questions for him, please send them to 016-201-9000 or call us at 03-771-09000. So now on your latest acquisition, which is of Kim Eng. So owning Kim Eng gives Maybank immediate exposure to ASEAN countries like Thailand, where you have no presence or minimal presence. And one major benefit that I keep reading about in the news releases that has been touted by Maybank is that you can trade for customers in Thailand and Indonesia without having to go through a partner broker. But aren't trading commissions under pressure right now? Why would you want to go into this business?
Well, we have to look at it from a holistic perspective. Acquiring Kim Eng was part of the bigger intention to embark on our wholesale banking activities across the region. Now, in that context, before this, our wholesale banking activities were very much confined to Malaysia. And outside of Malaysia, in Singapore and Indonesia, we have the corporate banking activities, we have the global market activities, but not quite investment banking. So there have been times when the clients that we have nurtured from small in Singapore and Indonesia, as they grow and they require capital market services, we were giving them away to the other competitors on the silver platter, so to speak. And with Kim Eng, it gives us the platform to be able to serve them in all the key markets like Singapore and Indonesia. And it also enhances our distribution capability. Now, I'll give you an example. We've been able to secure a lot of mandates domestically in our home market. And And that was also aided by the fact that we're now able to distribute the equity products into the region and into the other international financial centers like Singapore, Hong Kong, London and New York.
Yes, so that is the investment banking activities. And in fact, the Maybank Investment Bank was given quite a big boost when you hired some very senior executives from competitors. But some insiders within the bank and in the industry say that Maybank is still stuck in second tier and is nowhere near CIMB in terms of origination and distribution capabilities. And here I'm quoting insiders that I've spoke to. What do you say to your critics?
I think the results would speak for itself. I think the team under Tengku Datuk Zafrul has done a great job. Obviously, based on the mandates that have been secured and based on the execution of those mandates, I think we've done tremendously well. And I think Zafrul has done a great job, and Maybank is now able to compete in all the major IPOs, major M&A activities. And I think that would speak volumes.
Okay. CIMB, for example, could be the sole global book runner for Petronas Chemicals. They did not have to tie up with a foreign voice. Can Maybank go on their own now internationally with this Kim Eng?
Absolutely.
And looking at the presentation that Maybank did on Kim Eng, and it listed some of the major advisory deals that were listed by Kim Eng, but they were mainly all before 2008. And it appears that maybe Maybank Investment Bank can actually do better than Kim Eng on its own.
No, I think we're talking about combining the resources of both entities. And we're also looking at the platform that's been created for Kim Eng in this region. As we said before, Kim Eng gave us the immediate platform into all the major markets in Southeast Asia and into the other financial centers of the world. When you combine the two resources, each will have its own strength. You find that it is a much stronger entity. And the other key element is that we are now also able to attract very good talent from outside.
We have a question here from a listener, and of course I'm bringing you back to the Indonesian operations. It's evident that Indonesians don't like Malaysians. What is your strategy to attract more Indonesians to bank with Maybank?
I don't think that statement is correct across the board. I think at the end of the day, Indonesia and Malaysia, we are part of ASEAN, and there is that very strong commitment among ASEAN countries to move towards creating the ASEAN Economic Community come 2015. And that commitment has been reiterated again and again, and most recently at the ASEAN Summit. And now as ASEAN becomes an integrated economy, there is a need for ASEAN to be served by a number of regional banks well-linked across the ASEAN region to further fuel the growth of the ASEAN economy. And I think on our part, over time, we would like to be seen more as an ASEAN bank as opposed to as a Malaysian or Indonesian bank per se. And it is our hope that the banks like Bank Mandiri, BCA, will also expand globally and especially into the ASEAN region as well.
Would you use the Maybank name in Indonesia? Would you change BII's name to Maybank in Indonesia, change the whole branding, make it yellow colour?
Well, it is a gradual process. When we acquired BII 3 years ago, we introduced the Maybank brand into the BII insignia. So the Maybank brand is already visible in all the branches of BII. That's a subtle introduction. As we progress with the recent refresh of the Maybank brand, it is our intention to be a bit more aggressive and embrace a lot more of the Maybank brand.
We have a question here from a listener. Was the logo branding, rebranding necessary? The funds could have been used to improve customer service.
Well, there are three principal reasons why we embarked on the refreshing of the brand. I think firstly, it's been some 18 years since we last did the makeover of the brand. And if you believe in branding, it's good that from time to time you embark on a certain refresh of the brand. And you see this in many of the global brands. So firstly, we believe that it's timely. Secondly, there's been significant progress made in the transformation of Maybank. We've seen significant improvement in our financial performance, in our customer service, and it is therefore timely that we embark on a refreshing of the brand to reinforce the significant progress that we have made in recent times. And the third is the fact that we have embarked on a number of major acquisitions, and there have been new additions to the Maybank family, like BRI, like Kim Eng, for example. So given the fact that these new entities will be embraced into the Maybank family, I think it's time that we embark on this refreshing of the brand before we rebrand these entities. And when we do that, it'll be more cost effective, if you like.
So when you say now that you're inviting these new brands into your family, and I understand that this week there'll be a launch of the Maybank new brand, perhaps you may rebrand the name or rename the group as Maybank Kim Eng?
Well, the entire group remains as Maybank. But when it comes into certain parts of the business, like investment banking, for example, we are open to adopting a dual brand.
And still on acquisitions, and so Kim Eng was your recent one, and you want to do this because of they have the investment banking license, that platform for you to spread your investment banking franchise in the region. There was also talks that Maybank and CIMB were keen to acquire RHB Capital, and in fact the central bank had given approval for you to go ahead and initiate talks. For Maybank's perspective, was this more of a defensive move by Maybank to maintain its lead as the biggest lender in Malaysia? I mean, do you really need RHB?
Well, before we embark on any particular transaction, it is very important for us to determine whether that transaction will be adding value to the shareholders or not. And that's the basic premise. And in our assessment, before we secure the approval from the central bank, we believe that the merger with RHB would have been value-adding, would have created value for our shareholders. Into parts in particular, it will strengthen our franchise, not only domestically, but also in this region. RHB in particular has got 7 branches in Singapore and 1 branch in Thailand. Now, the 7 branches, you combine that with our existing 22 branches, you can see the significant enhancement of the network. Likewise, in the case of Thailand, although there's only 1 branch in Thailand, when you combine that with our 41 branches of Kim Eng, so again, that can create a significant franchise for Maybank in Thailand as well. So beyond that, when we look at all the other numbers, we believe that would have been earnings accretive based on certain valuation. So unfortunately, there were certain transactions among the shareholders that resulted in a higher expectation of valuation. That's when we decided to back down from that transaction.
Just looking at the Malaysian operations, where RHB is particularly strong, I can understand the Kim Eng rationale because it's Singapore, Thailand. But for RHB, they're mainly strong in Malaysia. For investment banking, CIMB and Maybank already have the choice deals. They really don't need RHB. No disrespect to RHB. For commercial banking, Maybank is already the biggest. You have the biggest network here. So for you to realise some synergies, you will actually have to close some branches in RHB if you were to bring RHB into your fold, and you will have to retrench staff, right? That would have been the synergies.
That wasn't the premise that we were looking at. I think sometimes people make statements based on the rough numbers. I think if you look at our branch network, we have 380 branches in Malaysia. RHB had 250 branches. Sorry, 199 branches, about 200 branches. So when you look at from pure numbers, it appears as if there's a lot of overlap. Now, we tend to take a more pragmatic and a more calculative view, in the sense that before you make any decision whether you want to close or rationalize in a branch, you must look at the profitability of those individual branches. Now, in the case of Maybank, out of our 380 branches, there are many branches that are very close to each other. So, for example, our KL Main is at Menara Maybank. A few hundred meters down the road, you have our first branch ever, Tun HS Lee branch. Further up the road, Menara Hap Seng, there's another branch. From Menara Hap Seng to IMC, that's hardly 400 meters, there's another branch there. Further up, Jalan Sultan Ismail, there's another branch at Wisma Genting, and then at Bukit Bintang. And they're all within 1 kilometer of each other. So the point is that they're all profitable, and there was no need to actually rationalize any of those branches. So in any M&A activities that we undertake, we have to adopt the same approach. So if both are profitable and they're both providing good service to the customers, there is no reason why we should close one branch or the other.
So it seems in the case of this RHB deal, it was really the valuation that was the killer. Is it true that you decided not to pursue the acquisition because you were asked by parties related to a top government official to offer a premium for Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank's shares in RHB?
There's no truth in it. And I think at the end of the day, it was based on certain expectations. We felt that it was time to actually withdraw from that transaction.
So it's nothing to do with any parties related to a top government official?
No, absolutely not. Okay. We always make decision based on our own analysis.
Okay, so but obviously Abu Dhabi side must have asked for a certain price, and you weren't agreeable to pay that price.
No, we haven't gotten that far, and I think the fact that the share price was transacted at certain valuation between two parties, as I said, created that expectation among the shareholders.
Because Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank paid a premium for their shares in RHB, and you weren't willing to pay that equal premium.
Again, based on our initial assessment, it wouldn't have been value accretive at that kind of valuation.
Okay, at that price that Abu Dhabi paid for their shares. Okay, this morning we're speaking with Dato' Sri Abdul Wahid Omar, CEO and President of Maybank. After this, we'll still talk about mergers and acquisitions.
Bluff-free medium, BFM 89.9.
This morning, we're speaking with Dato' Sri Abdul Wahid Omar, the President and CEO of Maybank. So we were discussing about your acquisition of BII and also Kim Eng. And just one more acquisition. Of course, there were talks that you wanted to maybe acquire OSK too, but that failed. But moving on, would you be keen on acquiring Public Bank?
Well, we don't embark on any M&A activities just for the sake of doing it. There must be a certain rationale for doing it. And I think as much as people are talking about domestic consolidation, we are not in a rush for that. Anything that we do must make sense. So I think at this moment, we're not looking at any of those transactions that you mentioned.
So if, say, a Singaporean banking and insurance group is interested in taking over Public Bank, would Maybank put in a competing bid to defend its home ground?
I wouldn't speculate.
You wouldn't speculate that a Singaporean group would come in, or you wouldn't speculate that Maybank would be keen on Public Bank?
Both.
Both, okay. And, well, moving on to the investment banking activity, I know this is a business that you're very keen to grow because you're already strong in retail. Now you want to grow the institutional, the investment banking side. And industry players tell me that Maybank has been working very hard to win IPO deals from CIMB. And generally for this year, it's been a bumper year for IPOs. But are deals going to dry up next year?
Well, I think in any slowdown in economy, obviously, you will see less deals compared to growing economy. But having said that, different deals will come into play. So, for example, when the valuation is low relative to the underlying value of that entity, then you will get a lot of proposal to take companies private and so on. So when the market is booming, then you get more companies going for listing and so on. But having said that, you've seen that despite the current environment, there are still good quality companies that can still go for listing. And I think we're talking about the Pavilion REIT, for example, which is in the market now. That's progressing well. And there's also upcoming Felda Global Ventures. So, you know, markets like this, they're not a deterrence for good quality companies to go for listing. So there will always be deals.
So your bankers are going out there telling clients to take their companies private?
Not quite. I think that's something which people will have to undertake. I think at the end of the day, there's a reason for people wanting to take their company for listing, and that's to be able to tap money from the capital market. But if the market is not giving appropriate value to your company, so I think this is where the entrepreneurs will get disillusioned, and they felt that, okay, they're probably better off taking it private, less governance. But again, as I said, when times are better, there's always a room for them to go back and tap capital markets later.
And the major deals go to Maybank and CIMB, and observers say the advisory industry seems very personality-driven rather than bank-driven. Is that true?
I think at the end of the day, we are building an institution. So in the case of Maybank, Maybank has been around for 51 years now, and we serve the entire spectrum of society, from the retail people to the SMEs to commercial businesses and the major corporates. And from our perspective, it is about providing good products and services to them. So when they have capital market requirements, it is our intention to be able to serve them with good investment banking products, for example. And with that, we have teams, not necessarily just any particular person. Of course, leadership is important, but at the end of the day, in Maybank, we believe in institutionalizing the operations.
And one advantage Maybank has is the fact that it has a strong balance sheet and it's able to offer favorable underwriting terms to your clients.
Well, it's a whole of factors, not just the balance sheet, the capital base that matters. Is the innovation, is the willingness to serve the customers at any time of the day, for example. It's about the distribution capability as well.
It's where Kim Ming comes in useful.
Yes.
And, you know, early on in the interview, you talked about efficiency, productivity, in more difficult times. In light of a possible slowdown and now that you're competing actually with other international banks, it's no longer about being local. It becomes more critical for Maybank to be more productive. And just doing a quick comparison with some international banks who have a strong presence regionally like Standard Chartered, Standard Chartered's operating revenue per employee is about 3 times that of Maybank. This is, of course, one data point to suggest that Maybank may be overstaffed compared to global banks. Are you satisfied with the value you're getting from your staff?
Yeah, well, obviously, I think the staff are doing a great job, and that's why we've been able to improve our performance over the years.
But they can do better.
I think obviously, like any management, we always want to strive for better performance. We want to improve our productivity. So it is a collective effort, and it is being embraced by everybody in Maybank. So we do want to improve. But I think I just want to caution against making direct comparison. So you have to look at the respective markets that they operate in. And you have to look at the extent of penetration of our services, because we don't just concentrate in the urban areas. We go into the rural areas as well, and we serve the entire population of Malaysia, whereas some other banks have deliberately chosen to serve a certain niche market. So, and in some cases, some banks also choose to outsource all their non-core operations. I think in our case, we cover the ground a lot better. So again, it's a matter of choice.
So you won't outsource your non-core operations?
Well, some of them we are already doing it. But there are certain things which we feel are critical where we don't outsource. So for example, in the case of extending the reach, so we have our branches, the 380 branches that will penetrate into the rural areas. But at the same time, it's never enough. So we therefore adopted a number of collaboration models. So for example, we work with Post Malaysia to have our counter services at post offices in some of the rural areas like Belaga, for example.
I was talking to some industry players, and is this a problem? Instilling performance-based pay and changing culture is not easy because they're restricted by your agreements with the unions.
No, I think not necessarily. I think, again, all employees want to be better, and we all want to be remunerated fairly for the work that we do for the organization. And in Maybank, we already have the performance management system where we rate the performance of the employees based on a rating scale of 1 to 5, and bonuses are all paid and linked to the performance of the bank as well as the performance of the individual employees.
Well, it was reported that you wanted to start another union within Maybank, and the National Union of Bank Employees is rather unhappy about it because it appears that you're trying to bypass them, and about 5,000 Maybank employees are now locked in a dispute with the bank over bonus claims and the legality of this new union. So what's the progress of this dispute?
Well, for the record, it is not us that want to create that union. Let me emphasize the fact that we respect the right of employees to be represented by union, but it is up to them to decide whether they choose to be represented by an in-house union or by an industry union. Now, in our case, in Maybank, we have three unions, in-house unions that represent the employees for different categories. And we also deal with three different external unions. Apart from NUOP, there is also the union in the Sabah and Sarawak. So they're all separate unions. Again, it's a matter of choice for the staff to actually choose. There are also some banks that are not represented by external unions at all, totally in-house unions. So again, it is a democracy. Let the staff decide whom they want to represent themselves. And in the case of the Maybank non-executive employees union, it is they are the ones who actually went to register with the Director General of Trade Union. And again, it was challenged by NUOP. There is a certain legal process that has taken place, and we will let the courts make that decision.
And you were quoted to say union banks have union members have a 2-month annual contractual bonus, and the union did not agree to a performance-based variable bonus, and therefore cannot demand payment over and above what was agreed to. You know, so this dispute here, you basically don't want to pay bonus because the unions have already said they want a fixed pay. Is this going to change?
Well, the choice is given to all our employees, whether they choose to have performance-related bonuses or contractual bonuses. And most of the employees actually are on performance-related bonuses, meaning that in bad times where the bank's not doing well, there could be times when we'll be paid less than 2 months. But in good times, obviously, we expect the staff will be paid higher than 2 months. So I guess it's a matter of choice. And most of the staff in Maybank and most of the staff in the banks, they've opted for performance-related bonuses. So no guarantee, no minimum. But alhamdulillah, I think we've seen the track record in the past. When the banks are doing well, the staff are paid much more than the 2 months contractual bonus.
And still on staff and human resources, a few years ago, a newspaper had leaked out a Maybank circular stating that only Bumiputra-owned law firms should be engaged by the bank. And since then, Maybank has said it would drop this policy. But the market talk is that Malay executives are preferred over non-Malays in Maybank. Is that true?
Absolutely no. And I think if you look at the composition of Maybank employees, Maybank is truly a one Malaysia entity. It's very well balanced, very diversified. So in fact, you look at the composition of the group executive committee, for example, we have a membership of 12, and one third actually people from outside the country. Given the fact we are regional, so we have international talent on our management committee, and among the the Malaysians, I think half of them are actually non-Bumis. So I think we are very diversified.
What about the middle-level management and lower-level?
Likewise, middle management as well. So again, it's quite diversified throughout.
So is it like a 30-30-30 or what is it, 70-20?
Well, at the upper level, in fact, it's more like, I would say, 60-40. At the lower level, obviously, there are Bumis and so on.
Maybank has over 40,000 people, and this is the size of organization that you're leading. And it's said to have a government service-like culture. So is it true that on your first day of work or maybe the first week, you had walked around the hawker center to do spot check with Maybank staff who were having breakfast there instead of being at their desk doing working?
No, that's speculation. I think Maybankers have been very passionate.
So that was
passionate.
Just a myth?
It was a myth. I think our people are very responsible. We have a private sector mindset, and I think that's reflected in how we've been able to perform.
So what is the myth, that the fact that you didn't walk around the hawker center, or is the fact that they weren't having breakfast during working hours?
Both.
Okay, so Maybank staff do not have breakfast during working hours?
No, and I think they come early and they go to the hawker center for breakfast, and by 8:45 they're already at their workplaces.
This is before the Maybank song is played.
Before the Maybank song is played.
Okay, and looking at Maybank's audited results for the year ended June 2011, your remuneration is about 4 million ringgit, including shares, your pay package. But your counterpart in CIMB is paid 3 times more based on their latest financial report. So as the head of the largest financial services group in Malaysia, would you negotiate to raise your salary?
I wouldn't want to discuss that in this forum. Thank you.
Okay. And just one question to end this. You know, you started quite humbly. Your father was a storekeeper. Your mother was a seamstress. So what advice would you have for young executives or mid-career professionals, you know, who are building their career?
Well, there are many advice I would give, but I think basically you have to work hard and work smart. You know, in this day and age, there are a lot of people who will say that you don't have to work hard, just work smart. But I'm afraid there are a lot more people out there who are smarter than you are, and you have to combine both working hard and working smart. And I think at the end of the day, make sure that you embrace all the good values in life and respect your parents. I think that's something which is extremely important. When you accord that respect to your parents, to the elders, respect other people, the way you treat them, and you can then expect people to respect you as well.
In fact, your parents still live with you.
Yes, I'm fortunate that my parents are living with me, and they provide the extra tender loving care for my two children. So it makes life much easier for me.
It's a pleasure speaking with you today. Thanks for your time. Dato' Sri Wahid Omar of Maybank. I'm Noel Lim on BFM 89.9.
Thank you.
BFM 89.9, the business station.